Psalm 27. I'm a big fan of the dry erase board. I know the other teachers don't always use it, but it really helps me keep my thoughts together. So you're all going to have to deal with it today, whether you like it or not. But Psalm 27, we're going to be in verses 4 and 5. Last night, if you were here, RJ talked to us for quite a while about martyrs and people of the faith and the incredible, really kind of ludicrous faith that a lot of people have in the Lord, how it inspires them to fearlessness, how it inspires them to be bold, and they can go out and make these crazy decisions. And David, who wrote this psalm, is one of the best examples of that. I think we study David enough that we can come up with plenty of examples off the top of our head. I mean, he's a kid, and he goes out and he fights a giant. Later on, he is being chased around by a king, but he still keeps his faith the entire while. And then when he rules his kingdom, he is constantly trusting in the Lord in every decision that he makes, for the most part. But David isn't alone. I mean, the Bible is packed full of people who make these kind of ludicrous decisions based on how fearless and how faithful they are with the Lord. Abraham, packs up, leaves his family behind, just takes off on foot, going north for a few thousand miles before he cuts west to go across the desert and then down to this land that God says, well, you won't actually have this land, you won't actually inhabit it, but your descendants will someday. And Abraham was just like, okay, that's fine, God. You know, that's good. I believe in you. I believe in you and your promise. In fact, I'll go out and even sacrifice my son because I have faith in you and I believe in you and your promise. And we read these stories and we study these a lot because they're inspiring to us, right? We like to read them and we say, wow, look, even when they had this really difficult situation that they were in, they still obeyed God. Even when they were in this dark time and it seemed like they were going to lose all of the relationships and things that matter to them in their life, they still have faith in God. They still trust Him and they're still fearless. And that's cool. You know, it inspires us. We say, maybe my own situation isn't that bad. Maybe it should be easier for me to follow God. And, you know, we see Him and we're like, that's so inspiring. I want to be like them someday. But how do we be like them? How do we get to the point where we have this sort of crazy, ludicrous faith that RJ talked about last night? How do we get to this point where we're able to say, I'm fearless, there's nothing that I fear, and I have so much faith in the Lord's promises that I can do anything? Well, David writes the how-to guide. That's what we're going to be talking about this morning. In verse 4 specifically, and a little bit in verse 5, we'll talk about that briefly at the end, David offers really a very simple process. I say simple, it's also complex. But a little process about how to build the sort of fearless faith in God. So let's read verses 4 and 5 together of Psalm 27. One thing have I asked of the Lord, that will I seek after, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to gaze upon the beauty of the Lord and to inquire in His temple. For He will hide me in His shelter in the day of trouble. He will conceal me under the cover of His tent, and He will lift me high upon a rock. David explains here how to have this sort of ludicrous faith in God by describing to us what he wants. Okay? He's going to be talking to us in this verse about what he desires, what it is he wants in life. And in fact, not just, well, I kind of want this thing, the one thing he desires, this one thing he really wants all the days of his life. And what is it that he says he wants? Tell me. You can speak to me. To dwell. To dwell in the house of the Lord. David wants to dwell. Okay? That is his main want in life. And that's inspiring in itself. When we're like, oh, cool, David, you want to live in the house of the Lord? What does that mean? All right? Like, that sounds neat. Sounds like a good thing. You know, I think we all, if we had like an option between like, eat 4 pizzas or dwell in the house of the Lord, we say, I want to dwell in the house of the Lord. You know, that sounds heroic. That sounds great. But what does it mean? Now, for David, it could mean different things than us, right? What was the house of the Lord during David's time? Not the temple, not yet. What is it? Tabernacle, right? He was preparing everything to be built for the temple. That was going to be his son's work. But he had the tabernacle. So, is David saying here, you know, I really want to live in the tabernacle? My one desire and wish in life is that I can change my genealogy, become a Levite, and then I can like live off of the offerings of the people and dwell in the tabernacle all the time. You know, like I guess that's a possibility. You know, that could be something David wants. That he, we know that he loved to go to the house of the Lord because that's where the word was taught. That's where worship occurred, and he loved all those things. And so maybe David wants to go there. But what I'm going to propose to you guys, and I think you'd all agree, the much more likely option is that why he wants to be in the house of the Lord, whether that's a tabernacle or not, is because the defining characteristic about the house of the Lord is God's presence is there. So what David wants isn't necessarily, well, I want to live in like this really pretty tent, or like I want to live off of all the people's offerings. What he wants, if we can say more simply, is God. Okay? He wants to be with God. He wants to be in God's presence, and that's the thing that he wants most in his life. That is his one greatest desire. Now, again, this entire lesson is going to be building off of questions. Well, good, David. You want to be with God. What does that mean? What does it mean to be in God's presence? I mean, sure, he could go in God's presence. Well, he couldn't, but you know, priests go in God's presence in a very special way. Is that what he's talking about? What does it mean to want to be in God's presence? And I want to start off by describing to you guys two things that it does not mean while we're still talking about dwelling in the house of the Lord. First, dwelling with God does not just mean being alive. Okay? Some people have this idea that if you are alive and on earth, then you have this presence of God miraculously with you all the time. And we'll talk about this here in a more moment. And the second thing that it does not mean is that being in God's presence does not mean being with other Christians. Okay? Now, being alive and being with other Christians both tie into it. And they both, you could say, be part of it. But they are not the whole of being in God's presence. Let me explain what I mean. Imagine that you guys walked in here this morning. Okay? And most of you were here last night, so you'd already seen how the huge stage podium area works. And you walked in, and across this beam, there was just a big sheet that was up. Okay? It went all the way from the ceiling to the ground, and you couldn't see what was behind it. But after we all got settled down and we were seated, and then all of a sudden, like, this light flashed on behind it. And you see this shadow cast upon the screen. Okay? So you see this shadow, and it's a piano. You can tell pretty easily. Maybe the top's up, you can see kind of like the curved shape, you can see the little stool out in front of it, and you can tell that there's a piano on stage. Now, none of you have seen the piano, but you can see the shadow of it, and you know that it's there. And then, after we're all seated here, you see the shadow of a man walk in from the side. And he walks up to the piano, and he sits down, and he starts playing. Now we can all hear the piano, and we can kind of bask in his creation. Now, this is cool, right? This is pretty neat, you know. I mean, you might be worried about why we have a piano in here, but still, like, altogether, it's a pretty neat experience. And you would say, yes, I am technically in the presence of this pianist. I am technically experiencing his creation. Have you dwelt with him? Do you know him? No. So some people get the idea, and it's in the Bible, from Romans and from Psalm 19. They say, well, if you're alive in the world, then that's all the presence of God that you need. And we should know the presence of God from creation. We should be able to look at his handiworks in the sky and say, there is a God, there is a creator. We see his musical score. We bask in his creation. We see the shadow of his being, but we can't say that we know the pianist yet. We can't say that we know the creator until we sit down with him and we have a face-to-face conversation, until you communicate with him. You talk to him, you listen to him, you learn what he looks like, he learns what you look like. That's how you can claim, I know somebody. That's how you can claim that you dwell with somebody. So, dwelling with the Lord is not just being alive. Dwelling with the Lord is building up, I'll say, a relationship with God through communication. Okay? This is going to involve, obviously, devotion to communication. Anytime that any of you want to build a friendship with somebody, I imagine that you do the same thing. Whether it's a friendship or you're trying to date somebody, you sit down, you listen to them, you get to know them, you talk to them about yourself, you look up their pictures on Facebook way too often, and like you get to know what their face looks like, right? And so you get to know them. You get to know them in a way that you can say, I recognize them, I know them. And then maybe you spend enough time with them and you can say, yes, oftentimes at least, I dwell with that person, okay? That's what it means to truly know somebody. You have to be devoted to communication to get to know that person and for them to get to know you. In the same way, we have to do that with God. When David says that he wants to dwell in the house of the Lord, he didn't just say, well, you know, I'm going to sit around and hope it happens someday. What he then did is went often and listened to the words that the Lord spoke to him. He went often and spoke to the Lord. And he went and tried to seek the Lord's face. Okay? That's what we have to do, those three things, if we're trying to get to know God. Some of the other teachers later on are going to speak more about seeking the face of the Lord. But I want us to understand that knowing God requires a devotion to communication. Okay? Now, this sounds simple enough. Like, so far, this seems like a really easy lesson. Okay, good, Jordan. You know, if we want God, get to know God, and you will be able to get to know God. That's simple, easy, little three-step process, and we're all like, I learned nothing today. But the problem that most of us face, and we're here to deal with problems, let's be honest, the problem that most of us face is that we don't normally get here. We don't normally get to the point where we want to dwell with God. If you're there, it's easy. It's easy to say, well, I want to talk to God. I want to listen to God. The problem is that most of us can't figure out how to want God, okay? And so we have trouble even getting to that stage. And maybe that's where some of you are at right now. And I'm sure that all of us are there at one point or another. But we feel like God's kind of distant. We feel like we're not very devoted. And we say, well, I know what I should do. The problem is that I don't want to want God. I don't want to want my Savior. I don't want to dwell with Him. How do we deal with that? Okay? How do we deal with that problem? And I wish I had, like, an easy little checklist for you guys on this one. And in some ways it's simpler than that. In some ways it's more complex. But my solution I'm going to propose to you that I think is supported from the Bible is that if you want God, if that's where you're at, you need to start getting to know Him. All right? Which is weird because, you know, that's kind of the end of already if you want God, then you get to know Him. If you just want Him, I'm sorry, this is really confusing sounding right now, but if you want God, get to know Him. Talk to Him. Listen to Him. That's, again, what we do with people. You go on a first date with somebody to see whether or not you like them. You find out a little bit about them. You give them a little bit of information about yourself to see whether or not there's somebody that you want to get to know. And I believe firmly that if you put a little bit of time and effort into getting to know some about the Lord, then you're going to want to dwell with Him. I think that that's the problem with most of the world at this point. I think that most of the people who don't want to dwell with God, it's because they never learned anything about God in the first place. So, take that as one application point. If you want to get to the point where you want to dwell with God, start learning about Him now. Start learning a little bit about Him, and it kind of creates this little feedback loop, okay? You learn some about God, and it causes you to want to know more about Him, and the more you learn about Him, the more you want to learn about Him, and it's just a cycle that builds on itself. It's a cycle that keeps building you up, and we'll get to the end goal here in a bit. So, that's kind of what dwelling means. It's more than just being in a specific spatial place. It's more than just saying, well, like, the tabernacle's nearby. It's being able to say that you know and that you were there with God. Okay? And this feedback loop causes you to love devotion. Okay? And then we see this all the time in David's life. He was somebody who loved to go into the house of the Lord, loved all the laws of the Lord, and also this sort of devotion makes you fearless. Okay? Now, RJ spoke on this a fair amount last night, so I won't copy it all. But when the Lord is the one thing you want, that's what makes you a fearless person. All right? And my definition of fear that I'm going to use for this lesson is the vulnerability of the things that you desire. Alright, and let me give you an example to help this make sense. Imagine that you have, like, a mirror, a really old hand mirror, okay? And I don't, but, you know, like, something that your family has passed down to you, and it's really dainty, and, like, you know, glass breaks pretty easily, and it's pretty, and it's precious to you, okay? It's super precious. This is the thing that you love most in your life. It's so important to you, it's really special, and you wouldn't give it up for anything. Now, if you guys have this mirror, put yourself in this situation, or anything that you really love, where are you going to keep it, probably? Where? Nobody has a special place for like the things that they really love and want to keep safe. Some, I can't tell what's being said, I'm sorry. Closet? Okay, so you're going to hide it in some way? Where else might you keep it? Yeah, you're going to lock it up either in your house or in a safety deposit box somewhere. You're going to keep it away where nothing can get to it. All right, so if you have something that you love, you lock it away, you keep it hidden from people, because people can hurt your object. They can hurt your mirror. I know you guys have experienced this where like you buy something new, and maybe it's a car or like a TV or something, and you don't want anybody else touching it, right? Because if they touch it, they might put a scratch. You know, they might barely hurt this thing that you love, this thing that you really desire and you care about. And we get so protective about it. And really, that's fear. It's anxiety. It's this sort of fearful life about protecting the things that we love. And this applies beyond just silly objects like a fragile mirror that you're afraid to hand to somebody because they might drop it. I mean, you remember last time they were clumsy, and so you're afraid they might break your object. This applies to people. Parents sometimes have that situation with their children, where the thing that they love and desire most in life is their children's life, and then they want to really protect them, not let them do anything. They don't want to let them go anywhere or be in any sort of dangerous situation because their one love might get hurt. Some people are like that with their own life, and they won't let anybody else affect their own life because they might put a little scratch or a stain or hurt themselves in some way, and they're terribly afraid of death. But what if your one thing that you love and want is invulnerable? What if no matter what happens, it can't even get a scratch on it, and it can't be broken? You're going to live a fearless life. You're going to live a life that it doesn't matter what happens. You know, I can be broken, my friends can be broken, everybody can get hurt around me, and I can be killed, but still, my one love and desire is invulnerable. It cannot be hurt. That's where David was at. That's where other people in the Bible are at. And I think if you're here, that's where you want to be someday. To have that, you have to have the Lord as your one want, your one desire, and your one love. Because if He is your one entire desire in life, you will recognize that He is invulnerable and that nothing can shake your foundations. All right, so that's the sort of faith that David had. That's what he wants when he says that he was wanting to dwell with the Lord. But now we run into a bit of confusion, okay? Because David says he really wants one thing. When I asked you guys what it was, you said it was to dwell in the house of the Lord. But do you notice anything odd about the rest of the verse? Does he stop at just one thing? What else does he say? Okay, so he wants to gaze upon the beauty of the Lord. And one more. Yeah, inquire, and some translations will say seek, and I'm going to say seek because it's shorter. All right? So David says, I really want one thing, and this one thing is to dwell, gaze, and seek. All right? Like, he lists three really quickly, and that's a bit confusing. Like, David, which one's your one thing? You really said you want one. Which one is it? And I think we can conclude here pretty easily that gazing upon the beauty of the Lord and seeking after the Lord and His temple are no different than dwelling. They are all parts of the same thing. They're His how-to guide about living the fearless life. And they are all part of it and stories about how to get to this fearless sort of level. So let's talk about gazing for a moment. Okay? We can have access to the house of the Lord anytime. We really can. Whether it's through prayer or through reading His word. But one situation in which we seem to find it more frequently is in worship with other Christians. That's where we read about the Lord's presence being with us, and that's where we seem to have a greater understanding of the Lord's presence. The reason why this happens is because when we're in worship, and whenever we're in, I'll say, beautiful scenes of nature, we're getting a glimpse of the beauty of God. Okay? And again, I'm building off of RJ's lesson here, because he talked a lot about the characteristics of God, about His justice and about His glory. And this is why when people are out and they see this beautiful sunset, you know, it has like a waterfall off to the side, and they see all these beautiful things, if they're a Christian, then they'll say, wow, this is the glory of God. And if they're not, they're still awestruck. And they say, how glorious is this? This is beautiful. I feel like there's some sort of longing here. And it's because that's a glimpse of the beauty that we are made for. That's a glimpse of the beauty that we're supposed to achieve someday. Worship is another one of those situations in which we get to see the beauty of God. Now, we get to see that through people, through the love that other Christians express for God. And I will say, one of the coolest situations where we get to see it is through the changing of people's lives. There are not many things that show the glory and strength and power of God more than when somebody who has lived a life in sin changes to live a life in God. That is one of the things that points us most directly to His changing power, to His glory, and to His redemptive plan. And so I want to offer this as an application point for you guys. When you're seeking to dwell with God, have devotion and communication. When you're seeking to gaze upon the beauty of God, stop for a moment. Stop sometimes. I think this is something that Christians today neglect almost to an extreme. We oftentimes forget to stop and just look. Look at nature. Look at the beauty that God has created around you. It shows His beauty. Stop for a moment and look at the Christians around you. Look at the people around you and see how God is working in their lives, about how He's changing them to become more like His Son. Look at how He's changing your own life. Dwelling with the Lord is not an entire process. It's just running around and constantly trying to get things done. Sometimes it's stopping and gazing upon the Lord's beauty. Christians, we need to remember that. We need to remember that sometimes we simply need to stop and gaze upon the Lord. Okay, so that's your second big application point for today. And then we're going to move on to the third one about seeking. Now, the word seeking here, I'm not going to spend too long at this point because I think we've probably got this one down. But the word seeking here, from my understanding, is that it carries the idea very strongly of go and get counsel. So David says that he wants to go and seek of the Lord in His temple. He wants to go get the counsel of God in His holy place. Now, like I said, for the most part, I think that this is the one that we've got down, if we've got anything down. We find that pretty easy to understand, right? If you want to know God, if you want to be with God, then you go out and you search for His will. You go out and you look for the things He's trying to communicate to you. You go out and you seek His counsel. And when you get counsel from somebody, when you get advice, you follow through with it, especially if it's advice that's as good as God's. What David is saying here is that he's going to go and he's going to dwell in the house of the Lord, communicate with Him. He's going to stop and just look upon Him, and then he's going to look for the Lord's counsel. Okay? He's going to look for the Lord's will, and he's going to submit to that, and he's going to obey that. So if you want kind of your three steps of what it means to dwell in the house of the Lord, what David really wants, those are the three things. Devote yourself to communication with God, stop and look upon His beauty in the world, and then seek after His will. And we do a lot of those things through His Word. We do a lot of those things through interaction with one another. And we do a lot of those things personally. But they're all necessary for us to say that we truly dwell with God. And when David does these three things, if I can change what I have written up here for a moment, I think really what he's saying is not just that he wants God, but if we can modify it a bit more, he wants to know God. He wants to know the Lord. This is what David wants most in his life. He wants to see the face of God. He wants to know everything about how God works. He wants to know all of God's will for him, all of God's advice, and he wants to know all of God's beauty in the world around him and in the world beyond. This is what David wants most in life. This is what he is after. This is all of it. And now we're going to change gears pretty quickly. Because we've talked all about what David wants from Psalm 27. We haven't talked about the New Testament any. And I firmly believe that if David had the New Testament, he would not have written this verse in this way. I firmly believe that if David had the New Testament and the Gospels, what he would have said instead is, "One thing have I asked the Lord, that will I seek after, Jesus." I believe that's where he would have ended the sentence. And there are a lot of passages in the New Testament that talk about Jesus being where we dwell with the Lord. Talk about Jesus being where we find the counsel of the Lord. And let's turn over to John chapter 14, because that's where we're going to spend some time now. This one's one of my favorites. I believe if David had the New Testament, he would surely know that Jesus is the only way to dwell with, to gaze upon, and to seek after the Lord. And John 14 explains this wonderfully. We're going to break up the reading here into a few different sections. We'll start with reading the first verse. And here Jesus is speaking with his apostles, and he's explaining to them about living the fearless life. He says, "Let not your hearts be troubled. Believe in God. Believe also in me." So he says, don't be afraid. Instead, have this trust in the Lord. And he's going to explain the same three things that we just studied about in Psalm 27. In verses 2 through 4, "In my Father's house are many rooms. If it were not so, would I have told you that I go to prepare a place for you? And if I go to prepare a place for you, I will come again and take you to myself, that where I am, you may be also. And you know the way to where I am going." Jesus says, okay, so if you want to dwell with God, if you want to be in heaven with the Lord, you need to be with me. It's where I'm going that you need to be. It's where I'm going that I'm preparing a place for you. Guys, if you want to be like David, and you want to dwell with the Lord, you need to dwell with Jesus. He is the only way to get there. Now let's jump down to verses 8 through 9. And he continues on with this point. Philip said to him, "Lord, show us the Father, and it is enough for us." Jesus said to him, "Have I been with you so long, and you still do not know me, Philip? Whoever has seen me has seen the Father." Guys, do you want to gaze upon the beauty of the Lord? Do you want to see really the pinnacle of his changing power and of his glory and of everything great that he is? Look at Jesus. That's where the solution is. I don't think David would have said, "Well, I just want to gaze upon the Lord." I think he would have said, "I want to gaze upon Jesus. He is the ultimate example. He's the one we have everything written about to show us the beauty of the Lord." And now let's go to verses 5 and 6. Thomas said to him, "Lord, we do not know where you are going. How can we know the way?" Jesus said to him, "I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me." So guys, do you want to know the counsel and the will of the Lord? Do you want to know what it is the Lord wants for his people on earth? Look at Jesus. He's the solution to that problem too. Whether you're trying to dwell with the Lord, gaze upon the Lord, or seek after his will, all of it is found in Jesus. He is the completion of it all. And you cannot have any of these things without Christ. He is the one that allows us to do all of these things. He's the one that allows us to know the Lord. And we'll read verse 7 now, which kind of sums up that point. "And if you have known me, you would have known my Father also. From now on, you do know him and have seen him." If we're going to know God, we're going to have to know Jesus. Most of us say, "I know Jesus. I've read the Gospels. You know, I know the story pretty well. Maybe you can go through like his final week in really clear chronological order." That's great. You know, those are all facts. We need to know Jesus. We need to say that we communicate with God. We need to say that we haven't just been in the presence of the person playing the piano. We have sat and communicated with the person at the piano. That's the level we have to get to. That's the level we should be seeking after, to live a fearless life and to dwell with the Lord. So as we start winding down, don't worry, I'm not done yet. But I think it's prudent for us to ask, what's the one thing we desire? What is the one thing you want? David didn't really seem to have any problem here identifying his one thing. And I think most of us, if we were asked this, would have a little bit of trouble. If I came up to you and I said, just the one thing you desire, not just now, but all the days of your life, we might have a little trouble. I mean, for the most part, I know personally, and I think this is true for most people, our one desire changes from day to day. Maybe you're having a really tough time at school, and you just really wish that that project or that exam, that stressor would just be taken away from you. And that's your one desire. You just want to be past that. Or maybe it's you're having trouble at work, and you just want that stressor taken away. Maybe there's one person that's really your desire, one relationship that's really your desire. And it changes from time to time, depending on your emotions, depending upon your circumstances, just depending on all sorts of factors in this world. We need to try to seek this sort of, I don't know how to say it, steadiness that David had in our one desire, constantly being God. It doesn't matter whether there's somebody around you that you want or don't want. It doesn't matter if there's school happening that you're trying to evade. It doesn't matter if there's jobs that you're worried about getting or missing out on. Your one desire needs to always be God. It needs to always be Jesus. That's what we need to seek for all the days of our life. And really, Jesus lays this out perfectly in John chapter 14 about, again, a how-to guide about how to do this, when he describes himself as the way. See, Christians, as Christians, we should want to be in the presence of God. We should want to know God. We should want to be with him constantly. That should be our greatest desire. And that's the reason we follow Jesus. See, I think a lot of people read this about Jesus being the way and about following the footsteps of Jesus and following his example. And we say, well, the reason I want to do that is because Jesus pleased God. Or Jesus obeyed God really well. Or because Jesus was a good person. And really, yes, all those things are true. And I hope that you want to be a good person and that you want to please God. But that's not why we follow in Jesus' footsteps. That is not why Jesus is the way. To give another example or analogy of this, I know some people who really freak out when you give them directions. Okay, like you can be describing how to get somewhere really simple, and you can say, you're going to leave my house, and then you're going to take a right out of the neighborhood, and like left onto college, right onto university, wrap around to Donahue, and take another left, and it'll be, you know, just right there. And they just freak out. And they say, no. Like, you're going to have to write this down. Just give it to me in my GPS. You know, I can't remember all of this. Directions are stressful sometimes. You know, they can be bothersome. If you make one little mistake and you don't know the area, and all of a sudden you're lost. And you can't find your way back, get reoriented, or figure out where you're going. The beautiful thing about Jesus is that he didn't come down to earth and say, here are the directions about how to get to heaven. He didn't say, make sure you do this thing, take this turn, and you know, hope you figure it out. And if you make a wrong turn, well, I'm sorry, but you're lost. What he did is he became the way. This is the difference between me sitting down and describe to you how to get from here to like Perry, Florida, and just like driving all along country roads, and me actually getting in my car and saying, here, follow me. Here, come along with me. That's the reason we follow Jesus. The reason we follow him, the reason he is the way, is not because, well, you know, he was pleasing to God and he was a good man and a good example and all this. It's because he goes to God. Where he is, we want to be there also. He is the way, the one we want to follow, because he takes us directly to the Lord. He takes us into the presence of God, which is what we should be seeking after all the days of our life. Now, what does this change about your life after? Back in Psalm 27, and I won't go into this too much because I think I'll be stepping on the territory of some other teachers. In verse 5, David describes what this looks like in your life. What does it look like when you actually are following Jesus? What does it look like when you actually have him as the one that you're dwelling with, the one that you're gazing upon his beauty, and you're seeking after his will? Well, it means that you know that you can hide in his shelter. Even in the day of trouble, even in the times when everything's stressful and bad, it doesn't matter, you have your confidence and your safety in the Lord. He will conceal you under the cover of his tent. And then I like the end of it. It says he will lift you high upon a rock. I don't know how much we're going to be able to talk about being glorified in the Lord today. But when you dwell with the Lord and you seek after his face, that results in worship. It results in us lifting each other up to glorify God. And then later, it results in God glorifying us. So, main application points for you guys as I close out here. If you want to dwell with the Lord, if you want to be with him, follow Jesus. Have communication with him. Be devoted to that. Gaze upon his beauty in your life and in the life of others around you. And then seek after his counsel and the words that he has written for us. Thank you guys for paying attention. We're going to take a break now for, maybe till like 5 after, and then we'll